Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Polished Woman, only on LA Talk Radio.
The Polished Woman.
Happy Monday, ladies. Happy Monday, Polished Women. Oh my gosh. Today is, we are actually honoring and observing the world's elderly abuse awareness, which was found, which started on June 15, 2006. So, you know, did you know that every year in the United States alone, just the United States alone, there are estimated 5 million elderly people who are the victims of abuse. And one out of all 14 cases are only reported, right, Max? Is it 14 cases? That's a lot. On its own, these statistics is bad enough. But what makes it worse is, in my opinion, is that the abusers often, you know, aren't strangers. Instead, they're the children, family members, spouses of the people being abused, or they're the people, you know, that hired to care for them. So these people that we should be able, these are the people that we should be able to trust, and, you know, around the world for our loved ones. But sadly, they aren't. So today I invited Lindsay Wallace. Yeah. Her mom was actually a victim of elderly abuse. And of course, we have a psychotherapist and gerontologist. I just found out about what gerontologist is, Dr. Julie Smith. And of course, our lawyer, Maria Barlow. Okay, I want to start with Lindsay. So, you know, Julie and Maria will hear her story. So Lindsay, can you please tell us about what happened to your mother?
Sure. So my mom, her name was Debbie Richter Wallace. She passed away at the end of October. And she really liked attention. So, you know, she would want me to start out by telling you that she was a photographer. She really liked dogs. She liked warm socks and Melissa Etheridge a lot. And she was also a giant hippie. My mom had multiple sclerosis, and it was a really aggressive course. And I started noticing that she needed a cane to walk, and then eventually a walker, and then eventually she was in a wheelchair when I was in fifth or sixth grade. But she was sick my entire life, and she was diagnosed before I was born. And around the time that I went to high school, when I was 13, she needed to sell the house that she was living in and go into an active assisted living sort of place, because she was falling down a lot and she was having a lot of medical emergencies that she couldn't get response quick enough from calling EMS every time or anything like that. And my parents were divorced, and I'm an only child, and I was like a younger child, so I wasn't in a position to provide a lot of care for her either, really.
And so you were 13 years old when, you know, this started, right? So that's why.
Yeah. And she lived for a while in this assisted living facility, and she contracted PCAs, personal care assistants, and home health aides to come and take care of her on with hourly wages through this service called Allied Home Healthcare. And they would, you know, make like Connecticut state minimum wage. I'm from Connecticut, to come and care for somebody who had very complex medical problems. But it's a really inaccessible standard of care to get something that is, you know, more expensive, or people who have more training, it can be completely impossible to afford that kind of thing. And so even though, you know, my mother worked for 28 years at the post office, and she became a postmaster eventually, she was really limited by the way that our healthcare system is set up and the resources that were available to her. And so we met a lot of people who were really, really caring and wonderful. And we met some people who just didn't really care that much either way and were like neglectful. And we met some really terrible people who were incredibly, you know, rude to her and did things like steal money from her and deliberately not give her care that she needed, or like not give her food or extort her and try to get more money out of her. And eventually she had this one woman who came in to work for her who convinced my mother that she should move out of this care facility she was living in and into a condo to be closer to this woman. And she sent a lot of disturbing messages to myself and other people in my mom's life who cared about her in an attempt to alienate my mom from like the rest of her support system. And when we told her, my mother, you shouldn't move, you should stay here, you know, this woman doesn't necessarily have your best interest at heart. She had been manipulated into believing that we were all trying to hurt her. And so she didn't listen to us. And then when she lost her spot at this facility that was doing an okay job of providing some care for her, or at least giving her a relatively safe place to be, Julie, the aide, stole $30,000 from her, which was like a really significant amount of the money that my mother had been able to save by running her credit cards and buying things to sell and things like that. And I think the part of it that hurt my mom the most was just that she thought this woman was her friend, and she was in this very, very vulnerable position where most of the people she had been close to in her life weren't around her anymore. And so to then be hurt by this person who was being paid to care for her and also who she thought cared for her emotionally was really, really hard for her. And because that relationship was important to her and was one of the only ones that she had, she decided to continue to allow this woman to be one of the people taking care of her. And so even after she stole all this money, she continued to steal from my mom, and my mom continued to be incredibly hurt by it, but also not want to tell her to leave until eventually the woman just disappeared and never came back to work.
Wow.
And
okay. That, so how many, so did she stay in that facility for like a while, or was she in that facility, or was she in a, what do you call that? A condo apartment for elderly?
She started out in a facility, like an active assisted living type place. And then this nurse convinced her to move, not a nurse, she wasn't a nurse, convinced her to move into a condo. And then she abandoned my mother and stopped showing up to care for her when she was supposed to, after she stole all this money from her. And my mother ended up developing a really serious infection as the result of a complication of a surgery she had had.
Yeah.
And she ended up in the hospital in the intensive care unit. And the hospital ethics board ruled that they wouldn't release her from the hospital unless she was being released into another rehab or hospice facility. So then she was legally mandated to go back into a nursing home environment, basically.
You know, this is such a common story, right? I mean, I want to ask you, Maria, I mean, why is this, you know, why this is such a common story? So why is this? I mean, listening to her story, can you pick up the specific types of elder abuse that were occurring, and also let us know what about types of elder abuse that may not have existed in this scenario but still exist?
Just to listen to her, unfortunately, it sounds like most of the types of elder abuse occurred, except for physical. I didn't hear her say anything physical happened, but the biggest red flag was the emotional abuse. She and by that, she kind of took them away. She took mom away, and she wanted to isolate her. Mm-hmm. So she'd have an opportunity to take advantage of her. She definitely committed some financial abuse because she stole money from her, right? She convinced her that nobody else, not to deal with anybody else. She talks her into moving. These are definitely some red flags that people need to look for. If you're going to get one individual that starts to talk your parent into leaving the facility and they're going to be somewhere isolated and alone, absolutely a red flag that something is going on.
Yeah, but who do you call, Maria, when these things happen? Do you call a lawyer? Do you call a police?
In Illinois, and they have it also in Los Angeles, we have a Department on Aging. There's a Department on Aging. they usually will be able to step in and help you if you suspect that there's elder abuse. Those types of organizations oftentimes will take guardianship over that person and ensure that they are being properly cared for. It depends on what's happening, who you call. It depends on what's happening. If mom is being stolen from or grandma's being stolen from, then you absolutely want to protect the asset. If they're being abused, you definitely want to make a police report.
Yeah.
And you want to ensure that somebody has guardianship over the person. You want to make a police report if the money is being stolen as well. But the problem is, and when you have a more strategic thief, you're going to have somebody that's getting checks written for cash. And then they can go cash them, right? And people assume that this elder abuse is just in facilities. It's not. Sometimes it's aunt that's doing it. Sometimes it's nephew that's doing it. It's not always just the facility. There are family members who are abusing and or stealing from the elders. It's sad, but it's true. So we have to be conscious of that. What's going on? Is this person declining? You have to be paying attention. You have to know. Yeah. Lindsay sounds like she was really young, so she wouldn't pick up on, you know, such red flags, but an adult should have been able to if there was somebody that could have helped her, for sure.
Yeah.
It's really valuable to hear you say all that, because even at the time I was like 16, 17, and I tried to call lawyers and I tried to figure out what I was supposed to be doing, but I didn't have any money and I didn't have like even the knowledge that you've just given me now about what steps there are that are available to you. So I was just watching this happen, and I'm glad, I guess, that most people are older than I was when a situation like this happens to them, because they have more resources.
But even older people don't always know where to turn. A lot of people don't know where to turn when there are these sorts of issues. Part of it, a lot of places don't advertise really well public service. Like, everybody thinks the answer is always to call a lawyer. Sometimes it is, because sometimes we have a lot of information that we can give. In situations like this, when I get these kinds of calls, I refer them to the Department on Aging, because I know that they help in those sorts of situations. Do my colleagues do that? I'm not sure. I can't speak to them. I would hope that they do, especially in a situation where there's not much money, or you have a 16-year-old calling you. What can a 16-year-old do other than call? I mean, that was smart enough to even think at 16, let me call a lawyer.
Yeah, that's really good.
35 that don't think that far ahead.
Yeah. Okay. How many cases a year or calls a year do you get from elderly abuse?
Me personally, I don't get a whole lot. I don't get a whole lot. And that doesn't mean that it doesn't happen.
Yes.
I'm definitely not suggesting that, but I don't advertise that, so I don't get a lot of it. But because my office is located in a community, people call me for everything.
Oh,
I can't help with everything, but I try to get you in the
community. You try to be there. Okay, hold on. Lindsay, I want to, Maria, you should hear about Lindsay as well. Lindsay is our she's our psychiatrist. Julie. Julie, can you tell me, you also had the same experience, right? Is it your mom?
I did. And first, Lindsay, thank you for sharing your story. And Maria, you made some really excellent points. Mm-hmm. And I have a similar situation in terms of the financial abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, where my mom made connections because she was lonely and wanted to find some purpose. And she probably had a couple $100,000 sold, her entire life savings, everything gone. And I'm in this, this is what I do. And I didn't see it because I wasn't there, because I live afar from her.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, there was so much fear around and shame that my mom didn't want to report it. So she let it, she just had it keep going. And I think, you know, this shines a spotlight on, like, elder abuse is really it's a hidden face of abuse. Like, we don't talk about it. We don't always see it because it gets a little muddled when you look at cognitive impairments or, you know, other things, substance abuse that are going on. So we don't know the signs. We don't know who to report to. And if it's being hidden because of there's this the shadow of shame, mm-hmm. we can't always address that.
But Dr. Smith, can you tell us a potential, since you're generologist, therapist.
Gerontologist.
Gerontologist. Can you tell us some potential signs of, you know, elder abuse?
I can. And so I'm going to share some, and then I'm going to kind of, I'd like to also share where it can get a little bit confusing and how you okay. can address that.
Okay.
So the obvious is if you see somebody actually yelling at, berating, harming your aging parent or an okay. older adult, if you notice bruises or cuts, burns, those can be signs of both physical trauma inflicted by someone else, but also self-neglect, because self-harm can come in there. And that is a form of elder abuse as well, is that self-neglect. Withdrawal, more confusion, becoming depressed, anxious. You may notice finances. We noticed because my sister asked to, you know, my mom wrote her a check and she said, hey, can I just check out your bank account? And we noticed she had nothing. So, you know, and it could be that they appear more unkept. These are all the signs of trauma. So, you know, their house isn't clean. They're not taking care of themselves. They're not sleeping. They're more angry. The challenge with this is these can also all be signs of cognitive impairments, mm-hmm. you know, depression around getting older, and kind of because we live in a society where often we treat older adults as less than, and that their purpose has a shelf life. And so a lot of the things they may be experiencing on every other day can also be the things that would be signs of abuse.
Lindsay, do you think because of the situation that happened to you, I mean, I want you to answer this, Dr. Julie, with what happened to your mom and, you know, at such a very young age, do you think you had a PTSD, a post-traumatic syndrome? What do you think, Dr. Julie, that she might have, you know, that?
You know, I think that would be, you know, for you, Lindsay, you know, I would say, you know, these situations can cause a lot of trauma, that secondary trauma for family as well. Mm-hmm. One of the, and it's hard to say if that is and I like to look at it as a post-traumatic stress injury, because mm-hmm. you do become injured in this. And, you know, that takes more exploration. What I would say, though, anybody who has had a family member, and I'm speaking about myself too, has to also address their own feelings, because we can also bring those feelings of shame and guilt and embarrassment onto ourselves, which then transfer onto our parents or to other people. I'm a big advocate in care teams, proactive care teams, so that we're all checking in on one another to prevent this, but also care teams to support ourselves after. Because our healing, we all have to heal from these abuses.
Yeah. How are you feeling now, Lindsay? I mean, now that you're a little bit older, right?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it was complicated because I was, you know, a teenager, and I had a relationship with my mother like a lot of teenagers have, and that outside of her being, you know, a very, very sick person, I was also like, oh my God, Mom, you're so lame. And that made it a lot harder for us to communicate about things that were happening in her life that were really, really dangerous or damaging, because I couldn't differentiate at that age between what was like my mom being really dramatic and what was something more serious. And, you know, the same was true the other way. If I went to her to say, this seems really upsetting to me, what's happening to you, she would potentially think that I was being dramatic rather than that she was actually in danger. And I think growing older was like, as I got more mature and as I learned more about her illness and, you know, how the healthcare system in general had affected her and failed her, I was able to start to, like, our relationship started to change. And losing her at the end of October was really hard, because I was just beginning to become, you know, less of a sort of like characteristically self-focused teenager and a person who could put more into this relationship with my parents. So I think that it's hard to say, because I'm also really grieving her, and I was grieving her for a long time.
Yeah.
I'm doing all right. And I agree absolutely about having to take care of yourself in terms of how it can be upsetting personally, and also having a structure of people to support, like an elderly or a disabled person who needs a lot of care, that that can't all be on one person. Like, everyone needs to check in with one another.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy to hear that there, I mean, I didn't know about the Department on Aging at that time. And I barely know about them now. So I'm happy to hear that there's somebody providing services to people also.
Yeah, that's so true. Now, Maria, do you think, because of this, we have the same, almost same, it's financial. Do you think, Maria, that people can actually get their money back if ever, like a restitution, if ever?
In theory, yes. It depends on the money that the person has available to pay restitution. Usually, okay. Have people that are scamming, they're not going to be rich and having a lot of money to pay back. Mm-hmm. And again, it depends on how they steal it as well. But restitution is always an option. But having a judgment against somebody that doesn't have the money to pay doesn't always do you any good.
Do they get? Can they go to prison?
It depends on what they do. Absolutely, you can absolutely go to jail for different offenses. But even in going to jail and having them pay restitution, if they stole $2 million and they get out, they probably won't have a way of ever paying back $2 million. Yeah. So for the most part, that money is usually gone. You're not going to see it again. Yeah. That's why you gotta look for those flags. You have to look for those red flags to hopefully avoid it. And parents can be difficult. Parents can be very difficult when you're pestering them, if you will. Like, let me look at your checkbook. Let me look at your banking accounts. Let me. Mm-hmm. And usually the caretaker, they're not going to go in and steal day one or even day 30. They're going to develop a very good relationship first.
Wow. And
start their con. So they're going to build a very good rapport so that they are going to have more trust with your parent than probably you.
Yeah. Can you give me a little bit of the red flags? Can you, like, a sample?
So for financial?
Mm-hmm. Well, all of them, I think. All of them.
So Julie went through a lot of them.
Yeah.
She went through a lot of them. I think another one that people have to look at, too, is sexual abuse. That one is not as talked about, but that's
what?
Too. Yes. It happens. It absolutely happens. You want to look for physical traumas. If not physical, you also have STDs to look at. Is it, you know,
oh, wow.
Your parent, and now there's a new STD that they did not previously have. So those are things you absolutely have to look for. A big issue, and I think Julie touched upon this too, what happens when your parents have dementia or something like that? And they can't tell, you know, they might be telling you something, but are they telling you something that happened previously or something that happened current? So it can be very, very difficult. Go ahead.
Julie, do you have any elderly clients?
I do. And, you know, I want to speak to something that Maria said, because I think there could be a grooming process that comes into place. So when we're talking about physical abuse or sexual abuse, absolutely financial abuse, there's a grooming process that happens to build that trust. And social media has opened that up a lot. And so when looking at restitution, so in our case, this had all happened through social media, online, I need your help. And so they preyed on somebody who felt very lonely, gave compliments. You're beautiful. I'm here for you. I'll talk to you. Mm-hmm. You send me a little bit of money. So there's that grooming process that comes in, which we don't always see.
Right.
And so I'm so glad you brought that up, because that is something we don't talk about. I mean, in terms of, I would say, I receive on average about 10 calls a week of family members, not necessarily towards abuse, but how do we manage what's going on? And often it's how can we get support for our aging parent? And I always say it's not just one. It's not just getting the support for your aging parent. It's also getting the support for the family, because, you know, at the beginning, Maria had mentioned that a lot of abuse happens from family members. When you're caregiving for an older adult, you can feel very drained, especially if you already have children of your own. And so you're pulling all these directions, and it's really easy to get angry and something. And so I get a lot of calls on how do we regulate and how do we plan? How do we create these care teams that you talk about?
How do we, Dr. Julie? I took care of my dad for the last, you know, for the past few months that he was still alive. It was like hard because they're very stubborn. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's, there has to be that flexibility. So you're not necessarily going to change viewpoints. And it's not about pushing your parent into something that does or doesn't work for them. There has to be this process. And so the first thing is saying, we want to work together. And it's allowing the older adult to be seen and heard so that they feel like they're contributing, because often they are dismissed and they're not talked to. And then, you know, it's also knowing, like when we talk about care team, we can talk about our emotions. We can, you know, I'm a therapist, so it's all feelings based. There's, you know, we talk about that, but there is this practical side of care management of, you know, and knowing who those agencies are, who the, you know, area on aging is, who the long-term care ombudsman is, who's protective services, even like who could you have meals delivered? And, you know, like look at that practical piece, like who can be your eyes and ears to check in on your parents, but also on yourself. And so that's how you start to create that. You also increase your communication with doctors, with nurses. Because they're, you know, like Maria was saying, you might have an adult who all of a sudden has an STD. And if you don't have that communication with the doctor, which means you have to have that communication to get permission, because in healthcare, we have confidentiality, you have to create those permissions and establish those relationships with the permission of the older adult before this happens.
Wow, that's a great advice. That's a great advice. How about you, Lindsay? Was any of your family member like a part of this? Like, you know, did they help you? You know, did they do something? Because you know, you were still underage.
Yeah, it was. We had a really close family friend who stepped up in a really big way to help take care of my mom, and it was really valuable. It was also complicated because there were times when my mom would say, you know, like, oh, Jimmy was really mean to me, or Jimmy was really rough with me when he was helping me get into the shower, get into my chair. And in those moments, you know, when I was away at school, and, you know, I would think to myself, like, if we lose Jimmy and he's not taking care of her, the other people who are involved in her care right now are not people who I trust, and they're not people who are really invested in her well-being in an emotional way. And, you know, the idea of saying like, okay, well then, you know, I believe you and he can't be around anymore, or I believe you, but he's still going to be around you and he's still going to be mean to you. Or, you know, I don't believe you because you have a neurodegenerative disease that makes you very confused sometimes. Oh. So maybe it's not true. Like none of those things were right. And of course I believed her, but it was unmanageable to me at that age, or I'm sure for anyone to be like, okay, so we'll get rid of this person, but what is going to replace this person? And I had, my mom had a sister who was kind of in and out of her life for a while. And my mom's sister and I ended up having a disagreement over the legality of what was going on. Because like you were saying, it's important to establish ahead of time who is going to have that person's power of attorney and be their healthcare proxy. And when I was 20 or 21, I was trying to move that it should be me. And my mom's sister came back into her life and she moved that it should be her. And my mom was relieved to have her sister back in her life because she was very lonely. And so she was more inclined to have it be her sister. And then also because I was young, she wasn't, you know, she was very wary of making me take on too much or whatever, which I was also scared about. So I maybe didn't push as hard for it, or I didn't know how to push for it in the right way.
Yeah. How do we take care of that, the provider?
The powers of attorney are going to be executed by the person who needs it. So in Lindsay's case, it would be her mom. Her mom would have needed to make her the power of attorney. If not, Lindsay probably would have needed to go to guardianship court and get the ability to do that. But if her mom was of sound mind, Lindsay's, her hands were kind of tied in order to be able to get power of attorney. If she says, no, I'm competent, I want my sister, then Lindsay doesn't have really a fight. Unless she can show, well, my sister, my aunt is only doing this because she's looking to steal or she's looking to do something nefarious. But in general, if mom's of sound mind and she gives it to someone else, then that's the person who's going to be in charge.
Wow. Okay. I want to ask you, hold on. I want to ask you, Maria, for a while. Maria, from a legal perspective, is there anything that the family can do to prevent their loved ones from, you know, being abused or neglected?
Like I said, the Department on Aging here in Illinois, we also have a hotline through our Attorney General.
Okay.
So check with the Attorney General. Julie said a care team. That's important too. I think that if people share the weight of dealing with aging individuals in the family, I think that it helps hold everybody accountable. It's not going to be easy to steal from aunt who, if they're six, somebody's bound to get caught if we're stealing. I think that, or even abusing, someone's bound to get caught because there are enough of us that are helping. I think sometimes we rely on one person or one facility and we're not double checking things. We're not triple checking. We're not making sure that our family member is okay.
Yeah.
And that's what makes them kind of vulnerable to this, these sorts of abuses.
But mental abuse, we don't see any bruising. How is that? Is that part of that as well?
Well, with mental abuse, that one's harder. That one's harder. But at that point, it's kind of, you have to, at that point, you have to physically watch and kind of pay attention. Is the person nervous around a certain person? Is that person constantly refusing to even allow you all to go for a walk in the park?
Mm-hmm.
Is the person insisting on being present for everything and every conversation? Then that's when you kind of want to know, okay, these are red flags. Is some reason that this person is blocking or preventing me from being able to talk independently with my loved ones, to be around them independently of them? So that one's a little bit harder, but that's why it's important to constantly check up and check in. If they know that you're going to constantly check up and check in, that's not an easy person to pick. You need somebody that's easy. Somebody that, like Julie said, her mom was lonely. So now Julie's busy practicing, right? Her craft. And here comes the crooked person is like, oh, well, no, you can always count on me. I'm always available. I can answer for sure. They're grooming. Absolutely.
Dr. Smith, this is one question that just came in. I think that one concern of a lot of people may have is what people can do if their elderly parents live far away from them and they haven't been able to visit because of the pandemic. What are some of the ways that elder abuse can be assessed from a distance?
I am so glad that question came in because the pandemic has added a whole new element. You know, we have the protections that have been put into place to protect older adults right now from getting the virus, such as stay-at-home orders, quarantine, don't go out, have also put them at greater risk for harassment and abuse. So again, this is where it's creating that full care team. It is finding neighbors. It's, you know, seeing if there a neighbor close by. Is there a friend? It's not relying on one person. Those eyes and ears. It could be having a friendly visitor. There are services that do friendly visiting. And there are services right now that have come out of COVID where there are Zoom check-ins or people coming by just to check in the window. You definitely want to screen and vet to make sure that that's okay and check those services. But the other thing that I really appreciate is you can have relationships with those that deliver groceries. That can be in eyes and ears. Like I said before, it could be a service like Meals on Wheels. There are services out there who can come and just to say, hi, just checking in to make sure. And like Maria said, An abuser is going to look for somebody that's an easy target. The harder you make it, the more people you bring in, the better. And I also think, and I speak because from this, from myself as well, because my mom does live in another state, constant check-ins. And I've started asking questions in different ways. A lot of open questions, like, tell me about your day. Who did you talk to? So that she starts telling a story. It's not just yes, no. And I make sure I carve out at least an hour if she'll Zoom, which she is not a fan of, but I'm trying to introduce that, but you pick up clues from their stories and you can also see what their needs are.
Well, so This is like having a relationship with your teenager. It's the same thing. You have to be friends with them, right? It's building a relationship. Maria, can you use this story, in court?
Which part?
These clues that, that Dr. Julie was saying.
Oh, you want to use everything in court. You do anything you can get in. Absolutely use it so you can let the judge know, listen, judge, here are the clues that we saw, and this is what made my client act on behalf of their elderly loved one. I'm going to give you guys an example of a case where I had.
Yeah.
There was a, I think the lady was like 94, and somebody came and literally moved into the house because her next of kin lived in a different state. And so someone came and moved in the house, and they had been parking in the front. And they had started driving her car. So the neighbor contacted and said, hey, I know this is not you all that's at your aunt's house, but someone strange is living there now. And there is some strange activity going in and out of the home. So she ends up flying here to Illinois, and she stayed with her. She actually stayed with her aunt. I want to tell you for over a year until the aunt passed away, but she wanted to ensure that nothing happened to her aunt. This was like her favorite aunt in the world. Yeah. And whoever the person was, they claimed that they were being nice, but they never came around again. When she showed up, they never came around again. They were never nice again. Wow. So you do have to, it's just like Julie said, that care seems important because that neighbor saw something that didn't sit right or seem right. And a niece to pretty much give up, she stops her life for her aunt.
Wow.
She came, she brought her son. Her son was a teenager and they came to Illinois and they stayed. I think it was even longer than a year.
Yeah.
Put him in school here. I mean, when her aunt died, she did everything she needed to do with the estate and she left, but she made sure to protect her aunt.
What is the nanny camp? Nanny camp, Bex? Can we use them? Can we use nanny camp?
If your family member gives you permission to, I always recommend them for a lot of cases. If the family member gives you permission to, absolutely. You want to, guess what? Your parent is your new kid. You want to protect that person. Get electronic access to the bank accounts. Be nosy. I'm nosy. So I'm going to have electronic access to your bank accounts. So if something doesn't seem right, why are you getting Lindsay $500? I want to know. Like, why is Lindsay getting $500? Lindsay's paid through medical. Why is she getting $500? I want to know. If Lindsay's not supposed to have it, I'm going to report her.
That's great, great advice, Maria. Oh my gosh. We only have like 5 minutes. Okay, I just want to say, Lindsay, from all of this, from everything that you've heard from Julie and Maria, what advice can you give teenagers who are, who are listening right now and their moms are, or grandma out there, or father, what can you advise them?
I mean, I think that the understanding that I have now of the other resources that are available, like the Department on Aging and, these other people you can get to check in on somebody, are definitely really valuable. And that's something I wish I had known more about. Mm-hmm. I think it's like in terms of, like being able to look at the person's bank account and record what's going on and stuff. Obviously, every situation is different. With my mom, who was, she was 63 when she passed away, and she was not like elderly technically, but she was really disabled to the point where a lot of her faculties were limited. But she also had moments of clarity where she would be like, why are you surveilling me? I'm an adult woman. Why are you like, why do you want to know what's going on with me? And I was like, that's entirely fair. You are an adult and you deserve agency and privacy and things like that. So I think that finding that balance is also really important, because I don't think that anybody, you know, another like elder abuse is also violation of that person's agency and like valuing them less as a member of society. So I think that balance is really important. I think being aware of the resources and having a plan, if you know there's a possibility that things are going to get to a point where that person can't care for themselves, knowing what's available in your area and what they want, not just like what would be convenient, but what, you know, what family members they would want to be around and what services they would want, and having that paperwork in advance, I think would have been really helpful for my family.
Wow, that's amazing. Lindsay, do you want to ask Dr. Julie while she's here? Like, is there anything that you want to ask her with in terms of grief and stuff?
I mean, I do. I wouldn't want to, you know, make you give a professional opinion to somebody you've known for 30 minutes over Zoom. I also, my therapist over Zoom is very helpful to me as well. But yeah, I mean, I think I really appreciated everything that you said about making sure to care for yourself as well. And, you know, that the person in that situation needs to be able to feel like they can talk to you about it. And so like getting them to tell a story and not making them feel like you're targeting them and like asking to find out something bad. You just want to be there for them, because regardless of whether they're being hurt, you should be there for them.
Yeah. But remember, remember this is a show that helps other people, other women and other people. Max and I, we always have this thing that where you are right now is where you're supposed to be. I think you guys went to Harrow and, you know, looked at the query because of this. This is the reason why we're all actually here, to help other people, to help other teenagers, to help the elderly, you know, to help other elderly people and people who are actually taking care of the elderly. Okay, so now I want to get the advice from Julie and Maria. Let's start with you, Maria.
Okay. I would say anybody who suspects that it's going on, don't be shy to make a call. Don't, if your family member is difficult, I imagine my mom's going to be very difficult. She's probably watching. I imagine she's going to be very difficult. So the methods that I'm going to use, I don't necessarily recommend. But yeah, ask the parent if they can, if you can put a camera in their house. You, of course, want to get permission to put a camera in somebody's house, but you never know.
Yes.
Happen. But the other thing you want to do here in Chicago, we have we can call 311. That's like city services. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes you can call there and get information about things for elders as well. Mm-hmm. Illinois, we have the Attorney General. Illinois and Los Angeles, I know they both have the departments on aging. Some of it becomes a little bit of homework. The other thing is, if you're in a state and you're just not sure, call one of the social service agencies. You probably could even reach out to the state's attorney near you and ask them. Because remember, they prosecute these cases. So they're a resource for you as well. The public defender, it's a resource as well. If you're not finding what you're looking for, you can even call a senior center and ask them, hey, I want to know what kind of resources there are in this city or in this state for seniors. Mm-hmm. And just ask. There's information available. Call a legal clinic and ask.
Okay.
There's information available. It's everything's not always an attorney. Okay. And most attorneys won't tell you that. But
thank you. Thank you so much, Maria. Sorry, we have 2 minutes. Julie, I will
keep it really close. Yes, I want to build on something Lindsay said, because it's a check-in with yourself. Reach out and get the help and the support that you have locally to really be able to develop that rapport. And what I would say is, this is all, it's a heavy conversation. And so to everybody listening, check in with yourself today to see what you need. And look at this. This isn't about being that vigilant, always on the edge. You want to be aware, but you also want to take those steps to develop the relationship so that you know the signs, they become more organic. So play games, even if they're online, do story time. Like my mom and I listen to crime podcast now, and we talk about it. But look for those ways so you're not feeling like you have to be so hyper aware all the time, and you because you do, but you also want to make sure that you're still developing that relationship for yourself and for everybody else.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you so much, ladies. Thank you so much. This is so helpful. I love this. For my advice, I think you don't have to be related to someone to care for them or to be concerned for them. So take some time this week to check in with any elderly neighbors that you have. Offer to pick up something from the store or help them mow their lawn or sit and talk to them for a few minutes, or maybe take them out to a park, right? Or beach, and check and see how they are doing. So, you know, I think this is maybe this week or maybe the whole, you know, whatever, like the next few years or next month, just be helpful to our elderly, you know, family members, and even it's just your neighbor, right? Okay. Thank you so much, ladies. And I hope to everyone who's listening and watching, give love to the next person that you see after watching and listening to our video and podcast. Thank you so much, ladies. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Max. Thank you, Ronan.
Through the